Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald on Fubar Radio.
Hello, you're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Ali Milani.
And me, Zoe Grunewald.
Coming up, over 11,000 millionaires have left the UK in the past year following Labour's abolishment of the non-dom system. We'll be discussing how we should approach the elite economically and whether this wealth exodus might be a good thing in the long run.
Plus, as Donald Trump U-turns on his tariffs, we'll be speaking to a psychic to understand the astrology behind his politics and whether we could blame the stars for Trump's irrationality.
As always, you can find us at Politics Uncensored UK on social media. All that and more coming up later in the programme.
But first, as always, it's the Week Unwrapped.
Well, I thought that people were jumping a little bit out of line. They were getting yippy, you know? They were getting a little bit yippy, a little bit afraid. Somebody had to do what we did, and I did a 90-day pause for the people that didn't retaliate. And that's what I did with China, because they did retaliate. A deal's going to be made with China. A deal's going to be made with every one of them. And there'll be fair deals. I just want fair. They will be fair deals for everybody. But they weren't fair to the United States. They were sucking us dry, and you can't do that. Yeah, I saw last night where people were getting a little queasy. I think everything had... the big move wasn't what I did today. The big move was what I did on Liberation Day.
So there it is. A week after Donald Trump declared Liberation Day and the markets were hit with economic turmoil, he has now announced a 90-day pause for countries that he hit with higher US tariffs. In a stunning last-moment reversal, the president said that all countries subjected to reciprocal tariff rates would see rates go back down to the universal 10%. Except, of course, for China, who have seen their tariffs increase to 125% following Beijing's retaliatory tariffs of 84% on US imports. On a social media post, Trump said, "At some point, hopefully in the near future, China will realize that the days of ripping off the USA and other countries is no longer sustainable or acceptable." The EU, which also announced their own retaliatory tariffs, have said they're going to pause theirs while the stock market has seen a surge following the announcement. There is suggestion, Ali, that Donald Trump has basically had what is now known, I'm sure, the pleasure of Liz Truss as his Liz Truss moment. My first question is, do you think the economic damage has already been done? But my second is, what do you think his play is here? Because he's made out, as we heard in that clip, like this was all planned, you know, this was all a way of him kind of making everybody, so there was a lot of yipping, whatever that means, a way of making people bend the knee to the US, doing, you know, he is kind of acting as God. But doesn't this reek of the markets were panicking, the billionaires were panicking, the business leaders were panicking, and Donald Trump, actually, he may not like it, but he was forced to U-turn?
Yeah, so I think the view from Donald Trump is that he's looking at the amount of tariffs other countries place on the United States and thinking it's unfair, and he thinks he can boost the US sort of markets and sort of homemade goods by placing tariffs on others and making them competitive. Now, the reaction to these tariffs has been unbelievable, and it is now it's the first chink in his armor, I think, in a really, really long time, where even Republicans are now going out and criticizing this policy. Just by way of sort of information, on Thursday and Friday alone, $6.6 trillion in value was wiped off before the markets closed for the weekend. That saw essentially the GDP of more than 150 countries combined. The 3-day market losses, which after the weekend ended up being north of $100 million, and so, whether the tariffs come or not, the way that the stock market works, and I sent you this video over the week, I think it was on Politics Joe, where I forget her name, but one of the commentators referred to the stock market as astrology for men, which I really enjoyed. A lot of it works on faith. And the problem is that Donald Trump is really shaking the faith in the US economy and in the system. And we're seeing that happen in real time. the politics of it is really, really interesting, because what we're starting to see now is some vulnerability in the sort of Trump PR image, because he's always played himself as the big business leader, as well as the strongman leader. And so not only is the economic damage that's been done as a result of the tariffs hurting him, but the U-turn itself is hurting him. What do you think?
Well, I think it's worth pointing out that Donald Trump tweeted or posted on, I'm not sure if it was Truth Social or on X, yesterday, a few hours, I think, before he retreated on the tariffs, that now was a good time to invest.
Right.
To me, this feels like stock market manipulation.
Right.
And
so he'd always planned to U-turn?
Well,
yeah.
I don't know about that. But I think what is extraordinary is that he offered financial advice knowing he was going to full well turn back his decisions. And I think it's very interesting that trade advisor Peter Navarro said that the tariff situation unfolded exactly the way it should. And his press secretary, Caroline Levitt, said, "You clearly failed to see what the President Trump is doing here. The entire world is calling the United States of America." What is really interesting is that Trump clearly wants to be seen as in control, dominating the world stage, putting America at the very top of the global agenda. He has continued these retaliatory tariffs on China, but not done the same for Europe, despite saying the whole reason he was putting the tariff rate up on China was because China had retaliated, when the EU had threatened to do so as well. Mm-hmm. Clearly, he has this vendetta against China.
Yeah.
But I think what is more apparent is that Trump will do what the rich and wealthy want him to do, and always has the interests of the rich and wealthy at his core. Yeah. And I don't think this was planned. I think this was scattergun. And I think this, they all might say this is the art of the deal. I disagree with that.
But they just say that about everything.
Trump backed down. But clearly, he is in the pocket of billionaire interests and, cares, is using his presidency to help his friends make a buck. And I think that's terrifying.
Yeah, and I think some of the discussions now is we're going to see a very quick pivot now towards tax cuts from the Trump machine. Because, it's more out of the traditional Republican playbook, which allows him to bring some of the dissenting voices back on side. There has been some dissenting Republican voices that have hit out against these tariffs, but also it plays to his billionaire class friends. So I think it'll be interesting to see if we do see that pivot towards more traditional right-wing Republican policy over the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. We'll keep an eye on that. Okay, well, over here, a political row has broken out after two Labour MPs were denied entry and deported from Israel.
There is no direct route into the West Bank, Madam Deputy Speaker. We have to go through Israel. This act was not just a diplomatic affront. This wasn't about security. It was about control and censorship.
And
exposure.
And arrogance of Israel.
Madam Deputy Speaker, no state, however powerful, should be beyond criticism. I desperately want to see a two-state solution. I desperately want to see peace. And I hope the Minister will be able to work with his counterparts in Israel to prevent this happening again, so that we can continue to act in good faith to shed light on what is happening.
Abtissam Mohammed and Yuan Yang attempted to enter the country on Saturday as parliamentary delegates to visit humanitarian aid projects in the West Bank. However, both MPs were detained and deported, with Israel accusing them of being there to provoke anti-Israel activities following comments that they had made in Parliament. While the move has received widespread condemnation from MPs across the political spectrum, the leader of the opposition, Kemi Badenoch, seemingly didn't get the memo and has decided to side with the Israeli government when questioned by Laura Koonsberg.
Are you suggesting the Israelis were right to worry that these two Labour politicians would break the law if they got into the country?
Well, that's the reason they gave. And what I believe is that every country should be able to control its borders. We do the same thing. There are many people that we don't allow into our country. And I don't think we should be setting precedents in a different way.
So just to be clear, you believe the Israeli government's account of this, not the Foreign Secretary, who says they were treated unacceptably?
The Foreign Secretary has given his view. I've given my view.
Oh dear. So that is the leader of the opposition siding with a state that refused democratically elected MPs, who apparently are supposed to be we are supposed to be allied with this country, from entering their country to visit humanitarian aid projects. And that is, to me, extraordinary. The Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, has very rightfully called the deportations disgraceful. What do you make of Kemi Badenoch's comments? I mean, is this just classic Kemi Badenoch politicking in that she just fires off a controversial anti-Labour, anti-nuance comment and then realises later down the line what she's essentially done is advocate for an authoritarian leader who doesn't believe in UK parliamentary democracy?
Yeah, I'm winding up for a rant. Are we ready? I'll get some thumbs up for the... This encompasses for me exactly where we are with discussions around Israel in this country, and exposes the plastic patriot, the fake patriot that people like Kemi Badenoch are, who love, absolutely love, to drape themselves in Union Jacks, love to talk about putting Britain first and British people first. But when the crunch moment comes, when two members of parliament are detained, have their passports taken off them, and then deported, by the way, Israel knew they were going, deported back to the UK, she sides with the foreign country over the British parliamentarians. Now, you would think that when MPs visit other countries, and there's only 600 MPs out of 60 million people that exist in the country, regardless of the colour of their rosette and the political party that they're on, we all agree that they're representatives on Britain in that foreign country. And so there is no question that this was an attack by the Israeli regime and the Israeli state on the British Parliament as a whole. If this had happened in China, if two MPs had gone to visit humanitarian and aid projects in China, or if they'd done this in Ukraine or in Russia, for example, or any other country, which, by the way, Israel is considered an ally by the UK, for what reason, I don't know. But if this had happened anywhere else, there would be universal condemnation, universal outcry, that this was a diplomatic attack, a political attack, not just on two MPs, not just on the Labour Party, but on Parliament as a whole. But Kemi Badenoch is so hollow in her patriotism, and let's just admit that the Westminster political system hate Palestinians so much that they're willing to denigrate the Houses of Parliament in order to side with an Israeli regime whose leader is wanted by the International Criminal Court for war crimes, and who just a few days before this happened had killed 15 medical aid workers one by one, lied about it, and then it turned out that they were in ambulances with the lights on, and it was clearly marked, right?
So, yeah, it's absolutely extraordinary. My question
is... How can you take them seriously?
My question to you is, what Badenoch said is out of step with MPs across the political spectrum.
Even her own
Treasury minister said he did not agree with this decision. So is this just Kemi Badenoch being terrible at politics? Because there are very few people...
No, this is ideological, I think.
You think this is ideological?
They're more pro-Israel than they are pro-Britain.
Well, that is, I mean, you may well be right. I think this is actually just
really bad politics,
anti-Labour as well.
Possibly, yeah.
I think she, you know, I think it's. I mean, I can see totally that, you know, as you say, there is this anti-Palestine bias in it. But for her to say it was, you know, it was a reasonable decision to detain.
By the way, the line was crazy. Everyone has a right to control their borders. What kind of stupidity? Yeah. Whoever the comms manager is who came up with that line needs to find other lines of work, because the question here. But these two MPs, let's just be absolutely clear, for all the weird sort of far right / pro Israeli people that are going to be in the comments of if this video is clipped. Israel knew these people were coming. Mm. Parliamentary delegations like this happen all the time. In fact, Wes Streeting had tweeted that he had gone on a similar delegation not too long ago, right? Mm. So Israel knew they were coming. They were going as part of a parliamentary delegation, yet they were still detained and deported. And what was the reason given? Because, well, first of all, their names were slandered. They might break, they might spread anti-Israel agenda. But it's because they spoke in the Houses of Parliament in relation to humanitarian international law. What are we saying if the leader of the opposition is siding with a foreign country in enacting a essentially political revenge on two MPs for speaking truth in the House of Commons.
But I think it's really worth pointing out that all I can see that Yuan Yang has said particularly is that she believes it is vitally important that A, there is a ceasefire,
yeah,
and that B, the media is allowed into Gaza to report on what's going on so yeah, that everybody can be held to the highest standard. What is controversial about that?
Well, Israel doesn't, I'm sorry, I know we're going over time, but Israel doesn't want witnesses. Mm. Let's be absolutely clear
about that.
And that's
what I mean.
Right?
But you know, for Kemi Badenoch to endorse detaining MPs on those grounds, I think is extraordinary. Okay, so Keir Starmer has said that giving 16-year-olds the right to vote will definitely happen, which would extend the franchise to around 1.5 million people. As we know, Labour committed to giving 16 and 17-year-olds the right to vote in all elections in its manifesto, but the pledge was noticeably missing from the government's first King's Speech. Should it go ahead, it would be a massive change to the electorate, the largest since 1969 when the voting age was reduced from 21 to 18. Ali, is this a good thing? Should 16-year-olds have the ability to vote?
Yeah, I think this is a brilliant thing. I'm really, really glad that Keir Starmer has continued his commitment to this, because it's common sense for me. The arguments around voting in the early 1900s were a question about the spend of taxation. Beyond anything else, if you are old enough to go to work, to leave education and go to work and pay income tax and pay all the other taxes that come with living in British society, you absolutely, morally, ethically, and pretty convincingly, legally, have a right to say how those taxes are spent.
Mm.
And the only way, not the only way, but the highest form in which we decide how our taxes are spent is on polling day in a general election. So if 16-year-olds, if we are committed to, which we are all across society, the 16-year-olds are allowed to go and work and earn an income and pay taxes, they should absolutely have a right to how those taxes are spent.
I totally agree. I think this is really important. And I think in the wider political context of what we see happening to kids these days, where they feel particularly disenfranchised by politicians, they're feeling particularly kind of unmoored, they feel not properly represented by the political system. We're seeing more division. You know, we're seeing more young people go towards the right, for example, and the far right. And the fact that the Tories presided over a decade of virtually ignoring the interests of children and young people in their policies, arguably making life a lot worse for them. I think this is a vital first step to re-engaging young people with the political system.
Yeah.
And also making sure that politicians do think about young people when they design policy.
And that,
because
by the way,
at present, they didn't have to.
That's how it works. Mm. We all know that politicians decide their policy based on who's more likely to vote for them. There's a reason where over 65's interests are massively overrepresented. Maybe overrepresented is the wrong word, but more represented than the other parts of our demographics, because they tend to vote more, right? And politicians reflect that. The reality is the people who disagree with this policy tend not to be against it in principle, but against it because they anticipate that 16 and 17 year olds will not vote for them.
Yes, they think they're going to vote Labour. And and it's worth saying that this pledge of 16 to 17 year olds getting the right to vote was alongside also, I believe, extending the right to EU.
Yes, I think so.
Nationals or citizens.
Yeah. And but I mean, look, the argument we always hear from pretty consistently from right-wing circles is that 16-year-olds don't have the intelligence or the experience to vote. But I mean, if Lee Anderson has the intelligence to vote, then a 16-year-old definitely has the intelligence.
And if Kemi Badenoch can be leader of the Conservative
Party, all things are possible.
Then anything's possible. Okie doke. Well, okay, that is the week unwrapped. And coming up, we're going to talk about Labour's abolishment of the non-dom system, which has been blamed for a wealth exodus, as the poor millionaires are fleeing the UK to escape an increase in tax. Just imagine how we feel when we are continually picking up the bill. We'll be discussing how to solve a problem like the ultra wealthy. That's next on Politics Uncensored.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald on Fubar Radio. Follow us at Politics Uncensored UK for more from the show.
You're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Ali Milani.
And me, Zoe Grunewald.
Over 11,000 millionaires have fled the UK in the past year, a higher proportion than anywhere other than Moscow. Since 2014, London has lost 12% of its richest residents, with the decline being attributed to tax increases, Brexit, and the fall in the value of the pound. Labour announced the abolishment of the non-dom system as part of their manifesto pledge, with the change being enforced this month. Non-doms describes a UK resident whose permanent home or domicile for tax purposes is outside the UK. A non-dom only pays UK tax on the money they earn in the UK. They do not have to pay taxes to the UK government on money made elsewhere in the world, allowing wealthy individuals to nominate a lower tax country as their domicile. It's a highly controversial topic. It's been spoken about in the political system pretty much since 2015 at the highest levels. Zoe, you have written a piece in The Lead titled "I'd Like to Ask the Flighty Millionaires, Where Is Your Sense of Civic Duty?" Tell us a bit about more of this piece and this story that's emerging.
So I was listening to LBC. I was listening to Nick Ferrari on LBC talking about this, and he was, you know, beside himself. What are we going to do without all the money from these millionaires? They're all fleeing because of Labour's non-dom loophole closure and the the incoming tax rises and just everything Labour's doing to this country. You know, woe is the millionaires. And I had a couple of thoughts. The first is, if people are leaving because they're worried about the closure of the non-dom loophole, let them go. They weren't paying tax here in the UK anyway because they were...
That's a good point.
So that's one thing. The second is, I just wondered if I were a millionaire, right, just bear with me here, and I was listening to that, I might be a bit like, hey, I'm not that... I care about this country. Yeah. Like, surely there are some millionaires who have a sense of civic duty, who understand that the UK is now in a position where the public services are on their knees because of a decade of austerity and underfunding and starvation from the Tory government. Right. They understand that we are at war with Russia, that we have no longer have a trustworthy ally in the US, that we have distanced ourselves from the EU, that we have an aging population, that we have all these existential issues. And therefore, clearly, what we have to do is raise some more money for public services and invest in this country to get it kickstarted and going again. If I were a millionaire, A, presumably I'd be, you know, bright enough and successful enough to understand what's happening. Why would I feel like I shouldn't have to give any more of my wealth over to pay for that? Like, clearly there are millionaires, and there are, like, the Patriotic Millionaires Campaign Group who feel that actually they should be taxed more because everybody is having to pay more for this, and why shouldn't they? I just think the characterization of the right-wing media, who are supposedly defending these millionaires as these kind of selfish ghouls who only care about the money in the pocket and not their communities or families or, you know, the country that they're from, is rather cruel. And, you know, I very rarely defend millionaires, but I really think that there must be a few who think it's unreasonable. And then the other thing is that if you are a savvy business person, surely you understand the basic principle of investment, that is, and return, which is that if you invest in something, you get a return on your money. So therefore, if you give a bit of your money over to the state, you allow yourself to be taxed more. The state then takes that money, invests it in public services or in big infrastructure projects. You are likely to then get a more productive workforce. You're likely to get your employees turning up on time because the trains are running better, because the roads are better. You're likely to get a healthier workforce. You're likely to have richer consumers and customers who come in and use your business more often. So I just think this characterization of millionaires as not only selfish but also stupid is probably not the most successful attack line by the right. And if there are genuinely millionaires fleeing this country, as this study, which is a little bit sceptical, suggests, then I would like to ask them, do you not have any sense of civic duty? Do you not have anything you want to offer this country that allowed you to put your business here or your home here or communities? Or do you just only care about the money lining your pocket?
So I have a question on that, because it does give credence to the argument that often comes from the left, that we're not all in this together, right? That we are in tough economic times, and certainly the poorest have been asked to pay their share in getting us through these tough economic times. We've spoken about previously on the show everything from the two-child limit to the cuts into welfare, all that kind of stuff, right? So I don't think anyone can accuse the poorest in this country of not shouldering some of the burden of the economic times that we are. Almost entirely, yeah. What this suggests is that burden is being the millionaires are wiping their hands of that burden and going, as soon as they have to pay a little bit more, they're bouncing. So it gives credence to this argument that
absolutely
not only is our economy unequal is the right word the inequality that exists in our economy, there's also inequality in the civic duty that we feel invested in.
And that's my point. You know, if I were a right-wing commentator thinking I'm defending the interests of millionaires, I don't think it's a very successful tackle. I don't think it's the sort of thing that's going to get the public on side.
Do we not also think that it also means our politics is kind of rife, ready for quite like sort of populist left-wing socialist sort of argument as to...
Well, it basically, this whole idea rests on the premise that we all have to tolerate people who are willing to hold the UK to ransom to maintain an economy that clearly isn't working properly. And the other thing that really riles me up about this is that we're often told that, you know, if we put up taxes, we're going to lose the wealthiest, the best people in Britain, you know, the wealth creators, the people who work the hardest, right? We know there is no correlation between hard work and wealth.
Yeah.
Not only because we've just seen assets appreciate, like houses, because there's clearly been a dearth of them, but also because people like Elon Musk exist in this world, who is a fundamentally evil and have a lot of money, right? But it also ignores the millions of workers in this country who work extremely hard and barely get by. So nurses, cleaners, hospitality workers, teachers, care workers, many of whom are relying on food banks or universal credit to substitute the income that they should be getting for the work they do.
Yeah, nobody believes the CEO of some hedge fund in London works harder than a nurse.
People do. People who listen to LBC do.
Do they actually?
Oh, they do. You hear them ring up and say, you know, I worked incredibly hard for this money. As if a cleaner who gets up out of bed, they have a family and they raise kids, and they get up at 4 a.m. and they get on a bus to get on a train, to get on another bus, to walk, to get to work, to clean, I don't know, a hotel or something, and then all the way back, and then they have to pick their kids up from school. It's just, it is extraordinary to me that people think...
Can I ask you? I'm really interested in you. So we were just talking in the group. We did a video on Thames Water not long ago, and it's kind of blown up, and we're getting, both of our phones are getting pinged with commenters. But we get so many people who are clearly in that working class, the poorer end of society, sticking up for the millionaires. So when I asked you, do people really believe that? A lot of those LBC listeners aren't millionaires themselves, but they all believe what you've just... Why? Yeah.
But people have just been sold this lie of that meritocracy.
They might one day become a millionaire themselves.
I think so. But also that people who, you know, like billionaires have just got that wealth from being ingenuitive and not profiting off the labour they've exploited from others. And, you know, the real punctuation of this is that... Wealth inequality has massively increased in this country. So in 2022, incomes for the poorest 14 million people fell by 7.5%, while the richest fifth saw their incomes rise by 7.8%. And throughout COVID and any other world crisis, the rich have always seen their assets appreciate, while the poor are expected to weather the storm and have worked harder for less.
Yeah.
That clearly there is no correlation between no obvious correlation between working really hard and the money you get. And I think we need to be really clear about this. And, you know, I think if these people are described as being vital to the nation, as engines of innovation, growth and prosperity, and without them this country would crumble, that doesn't align with this picture that the right keep painting them of as ruthlessly self-serving cowards who flee at the first sign of civic duty.
But also, so why isn't this... I mean, we just spoke about patriotism. Why isn't this linked to patriotism? Why... don't people view that what they're trying to do is hold the economy hostage, right? Where they say certain policies you cannot do because I'll bounce, right? So if you tax me more, I'll leave, right? Why isn't that seen? All the conversation around patriotism in this country seems to be linked to immigration. Why don't we ever talk about patriotism with the fact that you see these 11,000 millionaires when our economy was in trouble? Look, we're in a stage now where the NHS has more than 4 million waiting lists and it's on its absolute knees. Our infrastructure is below all of our sort of economic competitors around Europe. The amount of sort of broadband and internet connectivity in this country lags far behind countries like Japan. So we're struggling, right? Yeah. And in that moment of struggle, these people are deciding to sort of jump ship and leave. Why isn't that the conversation around patriotism? Why is it always about small boats and not billionaires?
And why is there not an understanding of how, even if you are the most hardworking, innovative, genius, you know, business owner in this country, you could not have built that business without public services. You could have not built that business without functioning roads, trains, a health service, local authorities.
Military.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you're right. We need to think about patriotism. And I think it's worth pointing out that during COVID, Spain implemented a solidarity tax, which is essentially a wealth tax, because they understood that in a time of crisis, it was fair enough to ask the wealthiest to bear more of the burden. people are now calling for a patriot tax in this country. Yeah. Name it a patriot tax. You know, give Richard Branson a big pat on the back and say, you know, why don't we all go outside at 8 p.m. and clap for Richard Branson? I don't care. As long as we find a way of taxing these people who refuse to, you know, give up their money that they have built on the backs of increasing inequality in this country and declining wealth in public services. Why don't we ask them, as you say, in those terms, are you a patriot? Do you care about this country? Do you love this country? But also, as an investment proposition, if you put more money into this country, in 10 years, you'll get more back because the workforce is going to be healthier. Public services is going to be better. More people are going to be coming to this country. People are going to have more money in their pockets to spend on your business.
Yeah. Can I ask? I have one quick question and then I have one broader question. I think we've got time. Where are they going, by the way?
Oh, they're going to Dubai, they're going to Italy, they're going to other European countries, apparently with more favourable tax arrangements.
But don't we have lower taxes in other places like capital gains and others than other European countries?
Yeah.
So it's just the non-dom stuff.
So I heard someone ring LBC saying they were going to Italy because they're more, they are trying to attract wealth creators in Italy.
So my broader question is actually, so this story, and you mentioned how you heard about it on Nick's show and LBC, and this when we say it offhand, 11,300 millionaires leaving the UK, it does sound like a lot, and people do worry about the jobs impacts and stuff like that. I've just done a quick search of the actual number of millionaires that exist in the UK, and it's 3.06 million millionaires.
Oh, okay. Right?
So what we're talking about here is quite a small proportion, but it's quite still important. The reaction, I think, is important. Do you think that maybe some of the most vocal yappy millionaires, like that fella from Pimlico Plumbers who I just saw. I have all sorts of questions about that fella, right? How can you be that rich and have such poor Botox done and have such a terrible haircut?
Strange hair,
You're welcome to come on the show and answer. What's his name? Do we know?
Whatever Chris. His name. Charlie Mullins.
Charlie Mullins, you're welcome to come on the show. But my first question will be the Botox you've been using. But do you think the sort of PR of billionaires is those people, but there are quite a lot of more patriotic
that are
willing to pay.
There's a whole group,
because 11,000 out of 3.06 million is not that much.
There's a whole group called Patriotic Millionaires, which is a campaign group of wealthy business leaders who are calling for fairer taxation. They want to equalise tax on income and assets. They want to introduce a wealth tax to fund the rising cost of public investment. Mm-hmm. They are headed up some really good people. I'm sure the founder of Higgledy Pies, if you've ever had a Higgledy Pie.
That's a great name. I don't know what
they're
it is, but
really
I love
good
that name.
Pies. I'm going to ask our producer to check, but I'm pretty sure they're part of the Patriotic Millionaires
Higgledy
group.
Pies.
And if they are, definitely promoting the pies because they're really, really good as well.
Yeah. The other one is the key making company. What are they called?
Timpsons.
Timpsons. I've always
And James Timpson, of course, now is a government minister.
Yeah, working on prison reform, I think.
And I believe, and again, I'll have to fact check this, that he doesn't claim a salary for that job.
Oh, right. Okay.
He's a
But I guess this is what we're saying, right? There are millionaries and billionaires out there, the people who've done very well, who are willing to shoulder a bigger burden.
Who have a sense of duty, who have a sense of fairness, who want to see, who are, do you know what they are? They're patriots.
There we go.
Real patriots.
I love that. That's a good place to end. If anybody, if you're listening to this and interested, you really should go out and read Zoe's piece in The Lead. It's called I'd Like to Ask the Flighty Millionaires, Where is Your Sense of Civic Duty? Go and read that article when you get a chance. Coming up, as global politics seems to get more chaotic by the day, we'll be speaking to a psychic to understand how we can use astrology to better understand the political landscape. All that and more next.
It's Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald with Politics Uncensored. FUBAR Radio. Politics Uncensored on FUBAR Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Ali Milani.
And me, Zoe Grunewald. Okay, since Trump made his political comeback, as we know, it has been a turbulent time for global politics. He's butted heads with the Ukrainian president. He's downplayed a potential national security breach as a glitch. And he, well, pretty much started a global trade war, although we'll keep an eye on that one. Hopefully it won't be an all-out trade war. But it seems this instability has been having a rather significant impact on young people, with a recent US study finding 80% of Gen Z and millennials are committed believers of astrology, with many saying it helps give them some agency in a chaotic world. So we've decided we're going to put it to the stars to help answer some of our burning political questions. I have to say, Ali is a bit of a skeptic. I am, I would say, a hopeful believer. So I think this is going to be interesting. And joining us now is the fantastic Inmal Honiman, the astrologer and psychic. Thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell us, do you think astrology is a good tool to help us understand everything that is going on right now in the world?
Thank you so much for having me, especially for a skeptic. I feel so excited whenever a skeptic would even let me speak. So that
well, listen, if you
huge.
Can if you can explain Donald Trump to me, you might turn me into a believer. So let's go.
My dad said the same about my brother. So I think to your question, Zoe, I think astrology is as good a tool as any to help predict changes that are coming up in politics or internationally. Obviously, social changes then will impact political changes and vice versa. And it's also a great tool for understanding who we're dealing with. One of my favorite things in astrology is personality analysis. Mm. Why are we all so different? Why would two people that had very similar upbringing would end up with very different outlooks on life? And I think Donald Trump is a great example of it. The best. Donald Trump is a Gemini. Mm. And no disrespect to all Geminis listening. Geminis are here
for sociopaths. A good time. You can say
not for a long time. They love to have fun. Geminis are entertainers. They want to be at the front of the stage, and they can only handle life if they're doing multiple things at once.
Okay.
So going into... Sorry, Ali, I'm listening.
Emma, what I wanted to ask you actually is I think that's really helpful, and we're going to talk about the individual leaders first. But as an overview, I don't really know how astrology works thoroughly, but as an overview of all the star signs, which star signs would you say makes the best sort of political or global leaders?
So I would put Virgo as the best at running things. Mm. Why? Because Virgos are meticulous, they're organized, they really care about justice, and they will listen to everybody. The planet that rules Virgo is Mercury, planet of communication. And you do need to be a good communicator to be a good politician. Mm. But everything has a but. There is no one star sign that's like the best, because there are so many different qualities that go into being a principled, focused politician that can listen to everybody. So you'd need quite a diverse astrological chart in order to be a fabulous politician. For example, Cancer is a star sign that truly cares about everybody and that goes out of their way to do what's right for other people. For example, Aquarius is the humanitarian star sign. So there are a few, and it really depends on what you want from your politicians.
What would you get from a politician who's a Pisces, by any chance?
Just... I was going to say, yeah. Ali is now wondering if his Uxbridge loss is due to his Pisces star sign.
Wait, so I'm a Pisces too, so you're amongst friends.
Let's go.
And a Pisces politician, on the positive, will really sort of fight their fingers bloody to do what's right. But Pisces is also, and please don't take it personally, because I am one too. Pisces is very easy to manipulate. You can show us, right, some edited footage, and we're going to be like, oh, that is absolutely wrong. And we'll go and fight for the cause, but we may have got manipulated.
That's why I always buy the add-ons when they're trying to sell me a car. I paid like £800 for wheel coverage. I don't know why.
It's funny that you mentioned Virgos, because as I'm sure you're aware, our Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, is a Virgo. Donald Trump, you've said he's a Gemini.
Yes.
You know, likes to be making jokes, but then can kind of turn on the head of a pin. Is that fair to say about Geminis? I mean, what did their star signs say about their ability to lead, and how would they get on together?
Right. So Donald Trump is a Gemini, but he's not just any Gemini. He's not an off-the-shelf Gemini. Mm. He's a sort of very specialized Gemini because he's got Leo rising.
Goodness.
And that's when it gets complicated. Everybody's chart is not just their sun sign, but where all the different planets were, where all the signs were at the time of their birth. Mm. And that Leo ascendant is what makes him need to be right in all and every situation. And that need to be right, even when he's wrong, is more his downfall than the Gemini. The Gemini wants to have fun, but the Gemini wants everybody to have fun. The Gemini will go out their way to make sure they're great hosts, they're great compares, they're great comedians, they're very entertaining, and they want everybody to have fun equally. It's that Leo rising that will stand up and put you down with a devastating verbal blow if you stood up to them. And do you know what's really interesting? I mean, it's very, really interesting to me. It might not be that super interesting to you. What's really interesting is that J.D. Vance is a Leo with Leo rising. And since you mentioned the Zelensky thing, I would like to cast our mind back. And it was actually J.D. Vance who was the first one to start being sort of quite domineering with Zelensky, start pointing his fingers and demanding that, you know, that that gratitude must be given to the leader of the free world. So having two people support each other in the White House, both of whom have Leo rising, that is the reason I have my popcorn out, because they will clash sooner or later. It's very difficult for a Leo with Leo rising to be the second in command.
Yeah, but
I'm not saying that, Donald Trump, sorry, I'm not saying that Donald Trump would be a wonderful and, you know, and egalitarian leader, but I'm saying that we have a lot to look forward to in terms of surprises from J.D. Vance.
So. But you gave me my sort of quick reading of the kind of politician that, what am I? A Pisces. Tends to, but you can't let Zoe get away with not getting one of her. What star sign are you?
I'm a Taurus, and I think it's worth saying, because I do care about, I do follow my, I check my star sign every day, my astrological chart every day. I'm a Taurus, and I'm definitely a Taurus in that I love food and good wine and lying in bed and being lazy. And I've always said that was is why I'd be a terrible politician, because I'm a bit too lazy, actually, to get up and be an MP.
I'll tell you what it is about Taurus. Taurus is only lazy about things that they don't really care about.
Yeah.
Taurians are unbelievably hardworking when they really, really care for the cause. Taurus has not been, if I'm not mistaken, super overrepresented in politics, but Taurus has been very overrepresented in royalty, Zoe.
Oh, my.
That's where you're going.
Do you know what? Fantastic.
Queen Zoe.
That's what I wanted to hear. I want to ask you as well, because it's not just about individuals' astrological charts. There's also astrological events that happen. And I wanted to know, we've gone through a lot of turmoil. I want to say over the past few weeks, but actually over the past 6 months, yeah, since I was born, really. Is there any sort of astrological events happening that have coincided with big political moments that we should be aware of?
Absolutely. So there's a lot that had already happened over the last 2 years. And the biggest one of them was the transition of Pluto, the final planet, which has been recently downgraded. It's no longer a planet, but in astrology, we're not really that fussed about that sort of thing. So it's still a planet. And it is the planet of death and rebirth. Pluto had been shifting from the very ambitious, focus, status symbol loving sign of Capricorn to the humanitarian, charitable sign of Aquarius. Now, when I say has been shifting, it's because the planets only move one way. They've got their orbit. But in astrology, we look at those planets from where we are on Earth, and Earth has got its own orbit. So the planets appear on an astrological chart as if they go forwards and backwards, forwards and backwards, because of their relative movement to us. So it would appear from where we're sitting that Pluto had gone from 20 years in Capricorn into a few months in Aquarius, gone back into Capricorn, back into Aquarius, back into Capricorn, back into Aquarius, and this is where we are. So during the past 2 years, we have had a lot of shifts and changes, a lot of people hitching their wagon to a certain political cause, which then appear to have shifted to the good guys and the bad guys.
It's the suggestion that that movement back and forth is what's caused the turmoil.
I think I think it works with.
So should we nuke Pluto? Is that, can we just send a nuclear weapon to Pluto and stop him like going back and forth? Like,
I would, from personal experience, as somebody who has really tried, Pisces, right, has really tried to manipulate astrology, I would advise against it, because it ends up blowing up in your face. And I know
with a nuclear weapon, quite literally. Yeah.
I know. And even though I don't believe there are any residents on Pluto, it would still be like super unhumanitarian for Scorpios, whose ruling planet is Pluto.
Oh, I have a lot of Scorpio ex-boyfriends, so I don't care about that. Listen, Imbal.
you want them to go in there.
Oh, yeah, they can go up there for all I care. Imbal, listen, I could talk to you all day. That was fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. That was Imbal Honeyman, who is the astrologer and psychic to the stars. Ali, we just heard from Imbal. Quickly, before we have to wrap up, because I really want to talk to you about
that. You have no idea how much I held my tongue.
What, really?
Yeah.
Did you not find that very enlightening?
No.
Did it not help you do a bit of soul searching about your loss and your loss?
Well, I did look up that Boris Johnson is a Gemini.
That's you say this stuff isn't real?
I'm not going to stand against Gemini.
Can you possibly suggest this stuff isn't real?
I mean, we'd need another hour.
Also,
what did you think? Because you're more of a believer.
I mean, look,
happy to call you Queen Zoe.
There's a part of me that's like, Keir Starmer is such an obvious Virgo, because Virgo's like really like regimented and managerial, and Donald Trump does sound like a Gemini to me. Yeah. But Vladimir Putin is a Libra, and Libra are people pleasers, and that man is not pleasing anyone at the minute. So. Yeah. But I thought she was great and very interesting.
Yeah, well, I always think what's fascinating most to me is people who believe it. Mm. That's an anthropological thing. I think it's really, really interesting. And what's most interesting about what we've just discussed that we didn't actually discuss with Imbal, probably because we can't, is why are young people more believers of this? Because young people are less religious than they've ever been, less sort of spiritual than they've ever been, more scientific, more logical, more rational. But at the same time, believe in astrology.
I think I don't know, and we've got like 30 seconds, but I reckon it's social media is part of it. But also one of the reasons I'm drawn to it is because I think people like to feel like when things are beyond their control, you know, when they don't have control over the future, that there is some belief system that they can cling to. And I think you're right, religion has become quite outdated and old-fashioned for a lot of people. But some level of spirituality, and people also love to be told what they're like, what their traits are, how people perceive them, and I think that's what astrology
does. Yeah, and explaining other people. Oh, the one thing I want to say, and I hope this is absolutely no slight on Inbal, who is, as far as I can tell, believes quite fervently, is I just hope no one makes any big life decisions purely based on their astrology, because I have seen it ruin people's lives. So,
God.
So yeah, just make decisions based on the facts in your own life,
and don't trust a Gemini. Clearly,
don't trust the Gemini, and don't run against the Gemini. That's it from Politics Uncensored today. Join us next Thursday at 5 PM where we unwrap this week's political talking points. You can stay up to date with the show by following at Politics Uncensored UK on social media, where you can find me at Ali Milani UK,
and you can find me at Zoe Grunewald.
If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back and catch up at FubarRadio.com or via the FUBAR Radio app.
Make sure you download it from your app store now.
Thanks for listening. See you next week. We don't know where Pluto will be, but we'll be here in the studio for another episode of Politics Uncensored.